As he ends his tenure as director of the Australian Antarctic Division, Dr. Nick Gales has cautioned Australians, including government, that the peaceful status of the continent to our south can't be taken for granted. He's optimistic about the state of scientific cooperation in the Antarctic, but he also notes governments have to act on climate change. Dr. Gales was chief scientist at the Antarctic Division prior to being appointed as director in 2015, and he's been with the organisation for almost 20 years. He joined me from the ABC's Hobart studio. Nick Gales, thanks for speaking with us. As you prepare to wind up at the Australian Antarctic Division, is the peaceful and scientific nature of the frozen continent guaranteed in your view?
No, nothing's ever guaranteed, I guess, particularly in the world we live in now. Antarctica really has been very secure for many decades, and in many ways people forget all about it. Think only about the heroic era and the Sir David Attenborough-type photographs they see. But it is becoming increasingly important geopolitically. It's becoming massively important scientifically. So it's becoming much more relevant to the everyday life of Australians and people everywhere, really.
And in terms of the geopolitics, and I know you're a scientist, you care more about the science, but the geopolitics really is impinging, isn't it? China and Russia in the headlines for their interests in particular.
Yeah, I mean, both the geopolitics and the science are important, and they're intertwined in very many ways. Antarctica is extraordinary in that it is, you know, the only continent on Earth that is dedicated to science and has been agreed that it will remain demilitarized. So the Antarctic Treaty that puts all of that in place is so important to maintain that status. You know, you can just imagine a militarized, contested Antarctica and what that could mean in a world today to realize how important that treaty is. So the geopolitics are critical for everybody. They're very important for Australia because it's our southern neighbor, the Great White Continent. And the science is important for a whole range of other reasons.
I just want to stay with the geopolitics for a moment because although I understand that it's intertwined with the science, is Australia doing enough to ensure that the treaty is upheld and that the future is as guaranteed as it can be?
Yeah, I think Australia in this area really has historically done very well and under consecutive governments has always been seen to maintain our leadership and influence role in there because of the importance of the treaty. And this government, 2 years ago, launched the Antarctic Strategy, the Australian Antarctic Strategy and 20-Year Action Plan that genuinely looked to ensure that all of our infrastructure, all of our activities down there, which are really about science being the kind of language of collaboration, were in such a state that we remained a leading country, that we remained, you know, a collaborator of choice, a logistics operator of choice, which in turn gives us influence and allows us to do everything we can to ensure the treaty is stable and strong and resilient.
I mean, that sounds like very much a sort of infrastructure argument. In terms of the actual science that's being done in the Antarctic, is that collaboration carrying right through?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you need the infrastructure. All Antarctic science is big science. You can't go down there and do a small project. Everything around it requires massive logistics, massive sort of capability to get scientists into the field, to get sensors and equipment operating down there. And really, all of these big science questions now are international, multidisciplinary, major projects. It's rare for a science project in Antarctica not to involve multiple countries and many institutions because they're big, complex, but fundamentally important questions, especially around climate. It's, you know, the climate is the core of a lot of the science we're all doing.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about next. I mean, and arguably the most internationalised issue, really. What's your assessment of the state of the impact of climate change on the frozen continent?
Well, there are two elements to it. The first part is that irrespective of what humans are doing to climate right now, we need to understand what role Antarctica and its surrounding ocean and the winds and the atmosphere that cover all of that play in climate. We already know they're, if you like, the engine room of climate. They drive climate through the temperatures in the oceans, the circulations in the oceans, right up through the northern hemisphere. So it has a global reach in driving our climate. When you lay on top of that the greenhouse gases we're putting into the atmosphere that in turn are changing climate in a very major way, that affects Antarctica and that affects the way Antarctica will drive our climate. So it's a cycle, and the atmosphere and the ocean and the ice are all interconnected in that.
Is Australia taking its responsibilities on the climate issue sufficiently seriously?
Well, from the science perspective, there's no doubt that Australia is a part of, and in often cases leading, very major projects down there that are fundamentally about that science, the climate science. So yes, if you were sort of reviewing the literature of where are the major breakthroughs in high latitude climate science, Antarctic climate science coming from, Australia is in the top two or three countries contributing to that work with other countries. But Australia does that very well, and I think we have collectively manage to make sure that we are sort of advancing as fast as we can our knowledge of how that engine room of climate works and how it's likely to change into the future, and therefore at least to provide to the decision makers the most accurate scenarios we can about what's coming down the line under different scenarios of mitigation capabilities in climate.
Given that very positive contribution, I wonder what you think when you look to Canberra and see paralysis around something like energy policy.
Yes, it's a tough issue. I think whenever you have science intersecting with immediate economic issues, and they're real, you get real complexity. You've only got to go back to, the tobacco wars and the amount of time and effort it took for the evidence, the very clear scientific evidence, to come through in a difficult space. This, if you like, is an even larger problem because that's dealing with one powerful, the tobacco wars were one powerful and influential industry. Climate and our ability to adapt and the policies that drive that adaptation have to, by definition, run through all elements of how we live our lives and what we do. I believe we can make really positive changes. We have to. We simply have to adapt to this. And the longer we leave it, the harder it'll be. And, it's not for me to comment specifically on any one particular government, but I think it's very plain that Australian governments, Australian people, like everyone in the globe, must respond to this because the long-term costs of not responding are vastly greater than the difficulty of transitioning to a lower carbon type economy.
Whales have been one of your great loves. Among your many achievements, you established the Australian Marine Mammal Centre, pioneering methods for non-lethal sampling of whales. You're also Australia's Commissioner to the International Whaling Commission. Is that body losing its ability to stop what some call scientific whaling?
Scientific whaling has certainly been one of the huge challenges, one of the really polarising issues in the International Whaling Commission. It goes on ever since the moratorium was established in the early 1980s, when commercial whaling was ceased in most countries. Norway continued since then, but in the high seas, Japan was the country that then used a particular article of the convention to conduct what they call scientific whaling. We've shown their previous Antarctic program was not based on science and was for purposes other than science and therefore was illegal. And that was a huge win for the first objective international jury to make a determination like that. Now, Japan have carried on that work, and it is frustrating, but it is a long, slow game. And I think it's important to reflect on some of the positive elements of the IWC. They have kept the moratorium in place from large-scale commercial whaling. That remains in place. And there's an enormous amount of very positive conservation work that the IWC undertake with many, many countries collaborating in very important projects that are seeing the recovery of many populations of whales around the world. And that's a fabulous thing. I mean, the IWC does a lot of terrific work, as well as the more difficult work around whaling.
Let's talk a little bit about how you got to be who you are after almost 20 years with the Antarctic Division as chief scientist, as director. What was it that sparked the interest in Nick Gales, young Nick Gales, in matters marine?
I don't really know. I was brought up all over the world. I'm an English army brat, so sort of brought up in Southeast Asia, and all of our weekends were in the water, in the salt water. I just feel like I've got salt water in my veins. I couldn't live away from an ocean. Everything I do recreationally, you know, diving, surfing, sailing, swimming, I'm locked into salt water activities. So it's always been a passion. I'd always wanted to work with marine mammals. I just found it exquisitely fascinating about how these mammals lived in this incredibly alien and difficult environment. So I had that scientific interest and really then wanted to understand how we, people, interact with marine mammals, and that's where my science went. So that fascination's always been there, and pretty early on, if you're interested in marine mammals, Antarctica comes into your focus because, you know, most whales in the world live and feed in the Southern Ocean. The largest numbers are down there, and so that those two things drove many of the decisions I made in where I tried to take my career. And I've just been extraordinarily lucky to have worked in so many incredible areas, and frankly just had fabulous jobs along the way. I've been very fortunate.
Well, fortunate, but obviously a cracking scientist as well. What do you consider to be your greatest achievement with the Antarctic Division?
It's hard to pare down to that. I have been thinking about that, as one does when one leaves a job, about what it is. And I think some of it is in that my part, as part of a whole team, because there's a huge number of fabulous people working there, in working with government to ensure that Australia's Antarctic program remains really strong and well funded to deliver the urgent science and to deliver the urgent kind of diplomacy from the science that is needed right now. I hope I've contributed to leaving that in a really great state. There are particular science outcomes. I mean, even that International Court of Justice case with Wales was an extraordinary experience to be part of, preparing the case and a witness at the world's highest court and seeing an outcome so plainly landed that I think goes well beyond the whaling world, because it's one of those important demonstrations that if you misuse science to make an argument that is not supported by that evidence, you will eventually get called out on it. And I think that's incredibly important in so many areas, and especially today as science gets pulled into question as soon as it threatens a business activity or a particular way of life.
Dr. Nick Gales, I'm sure many Australians look on and thank you very much for your work. All the best for the future.
Thanks very much, Linda.
Dr. Nick Gales, I'm sure many Australians look on and thank you very much for your work. All the best for the future.
Thanks very much, Linda.
Dr. Nick Gales, outgoing head of the Australian Antarctic Division.